Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, before I start this week's episode, I just want to let you know that I am doing my first ever live book cheat podcast. I am taking this thing live on Sunday, April 4th at 4:15 in the afternoon. It's a Sunday afternoon at the European Beer Cafe in Melbourne. And I've just announced the guests are two of my absolute favourites on this show, Michelle Brazier and Ben Russell. And we'll be together tackling a brand new classic before your very eyes. If you want to be there, tickets are on sale right now and you can buy them via the link in the description of this episode. And if you're a fan of the mini podcast network that is Do Go On, it is a big day of comedy and podcasting that day. So at 2 p.m, Matt Stewart is doing his Primates live podcast with guests Nick Mason from The Weekly Planet, Cass Page from Sandspans Radio, and Evan Munro Smith from Gamey Gamey Game, all previous guests of Book Cheat. That goes straight into Book Cheat live at 4:15. with Michelle Brazier and Ben Russell. You can then go watch Matt do his stand-up show at 6:55 at the Victoria Hotel and bring it all home with me, Matt, and Jess Perkins live doing our Do Go On podcast at 8:30 back at the European Beer Cafe. And if you can do all four shows in a day, I will salute you. But yeah, first ever live book cheat, April 4, 4:15. Tickets are on sale now via the link in the description of this episode. I really hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnke and on each episode of this show we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week, it's Sammy Shah and Jack Drews.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, how are we doing?
Sammy Shah, yeah. And this is...
I'm Jack Drews, everyone.
There we go.
This is a great double act here.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming along.
Of course, thanks for having us.
We're recording this on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, so sorry to drag you inside away from the sun.
No, I hate the sun. I'm not a fan of the sun. And I'm happy to avoid the damn thing.
Anti-sun?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've never been a fan.
Jack, feelings on the sun?
I was out ploughing a field before, and now my harvest is going to be devastated.
Oh, but, no.
Happy to support the pod.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
What were your crops?
Just wheat.
All right, cool. Yeah.
Basics.
Just making bread. Yeah, good.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Good stuff.
Yeah, well, while you're in here, I've sent out a team to to reap the benefits of your hard work.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of wheat tonight to look forward to. Well, thanks for coming on the show. We talk about classic books. Sammy, it's your first time on the show.
Yes.
Thanks for coming along.
Yeah, I have listened to previous episodes, though. I think the last one I heard, though, was a while back. It was Ben Russell was on with someone else. I can't remember who. And it was a good one. Yeah,
oh, thank you very much, because I reached out to you, and I explained the show. Thing, do you want to be on it? And you're like, yeah, I've heard it. And I was like, very happy with that. So appreciate that.
Nerdy, I'm down with.
Yeah, okay,
so,
great.
Sammy, I'm just curious because you're an author yourself. Have you had any people do podcasts where they chat about any of your stuff? Because I feel like that would be.
I do not sell well enough for that to ever happen. No, you know what it is. Like, when a book comes out, they put you on a promotional tour.
Right.
So there'll be
some
book podcasters or radio shows that will read your book because they have to, and then the producer told them to read it, and then they'll have you on to talk about it a little bit. But no one's actually done it for the joy of reading it.
No one's done more, like, riffing about your
book. Yeah, no, not at all.
Well, how would you feel if people did a book cheat style thing where they talked about it, sort of made fun of it a little bit?
Oh,
would you be on it, or would you be, you wouldn't be offended?
No, I would be completely thrilled, of course. Like, it's one of those things where someone once took a picture of my book, and it was at, Savers in Brunswick?
Yep.
It was in the secondhand bookshelf aisle. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I just saw this in the Savers thing, and this must be really painful for you. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's awesome. It means one person read it. They don't want any more. Now someone else might read it. I don't give a shit as long as people are reading it. It's not like you can earn money doing it anyway, right? Like every copy sold gives me $3. So fuck it. Yeah.
Well, if you sell 80 million copies.
Yeah, I'm not one of those, unfortunately. I realized very early in my career I am not even a mid-list author. Yeah.
How do they think stuff ends up at op shops? Like everything there is just thrown in disgust.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not wearing these jeans. Get them out of here. Yeah,
they send you a photo. They're like, I'm so sorry, this must really offend you. I found this leather jacket.
Yeah.
I know you wear a lot of leather.
Yeah.
But also, if they were worried you're going to be offended, why do they send it
to
you?
That's the question that I did ask.
That's crazy.
I did ask that question. This was not a good person, it turned out, in life. Yes.
So you published multiple books, but are you much of a reader?
Yeah, voraciously.
And has that always been the case?
Yeah, basically. It's why I have spectacles now, because I used to read under the covers at night when I was a kid. My family used to have to pat me down before we'd go to dinners and events because I'd always be smuggling books into the things because I didn't want to sit around making small talk.
Trying to sneak a copy of Jane Austen into this Thai restaurant. No chance.
Yeah. I had a big garden when I was growing up, and I had friends who'd come over to play cricket in my garden while I was upstairs reading books because I'm like, I don't want to play cricket. I don't give a shit. And to this day, especially with the advent of audiobooks, I'm thrilled because now I can do an audiobook and a physical book in a week. So it's great. Yeah.
At the same time, or are you taking concentrating on one?
No. They're different ones.
There are amazing people that can do that kind of thing.
I know. No, I listen to one, and when I'm working, like, you know, cleaning the house or driving or something, and then when I'm just able to sit down, then I'll read another book.
Yeah, sure. And has there been any highlights lately?
Definitely Stephen King's new one. I'm a big Stephen King nut. Like, I always have been.
Have you read most of his? Because there's so
pretty
many.
Much everything.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been a Stephen King completist my whole life. So it's which is his new one, has just come out. So I've been audiobooking that, which has been great. And I just finished a really great one called This Is How You Lose the Time War, which is a novella. It's like a little thin piece. And it's basically a love story between two people from different factions of a war that is being fought through time. And it sounds like a science fiction thing, but it's really not. It's beautiful. It's poetic. It's one of the best things I've read in a while. So, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. All right.
Yeah.
Great.
And how about you, Jack? You been reading much lately?
I was just telling you guys before that I...
Yeah, I must say. All right. Yeah. The cat's out of the bag. I knew the answer to this question. I'll do a pre-interview. This whole thing is scripted.
Jack just pulled back the curtains completely.
Because it just made me sound like an idiot. Like, yeah, I already told you, man.
I literally told you this.
That's a smooth mic technique.
You never listened to me.
As I was saying.
As I detailed in my email to you guys. I haven't been reading much recently because I've just gotten into those hardcore history podcasts, which are like kind of audiobooks in themselves, really. They're like 8 to 10 hours or something.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So that's been great. I've been listening to the...
And again. And again. That's a Dan Carlin voice. They killed him again. And again. It's like, what's your accent, man?
Unquote.
Yeah.
There'll be like two people in your audience who understand this reference, but it's like, I'm having the weirdest thing because there's this, I really like watching MMA, mm-hmm. and there's this MMA sort of journalist, broadcaster, former fighter guy called Chael Sonnen, who does these videos where he breaks down fights and he goes on these weird sort of tangents that don't make a lot of sense, and he'll get all of these weird segues, but he just has exactly the same voice as the guy does the hardcore podcast. So it's like I'll be listening to it and I'll just sort of just drift off a little bit, and I'm like, is this like, has Chael Sonnen got so distracted from his fight analysis that he's now talking about like
14 hours into the Second World War's Eastern Front?
Yeah. Like, he's really off track here.
An incredible analogy that he's drawing.
No, hardcore history is fantastic. If you've just gotten into it, I can recommend Ghost of the Ostfront. What's the one about Caesar and everyone?
Oh, Death Throes of the Republic.
Death Throes of the Republic.
Best audio thing I've ever listened to. I love it.
You know, if you pair that one with the History of Rome podcast by Mike Duncan, by the time you're done, you're basically a PhD in history.
You just know them
officially.
Because that's quite long too, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's multiple episodes.
20 minutes each, 30 minutes each. But that's the complete history of the Western Republic. And, you know, and Death Throes of the Republic is like 300, 400 years as well.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah.
I absolutely love it. Now, today we are here to talk about a classic as always, and today it is Lord of the Flies. A commonly requested one.
William Golding.
Did you, I asked you before, Sammy, you said that maybe you've studied it?
Yes. So basically in ninth grade, my English teacher assigned Lord of the Flies to us for the entire year. And it was very strange because no other schools, no other teachers kind of did the Lord of the Flies. They did other books. But she decided, she's like, this is a very important book. Kids need to read it. I don't know if ninth graders should read it, but we did.
Yep.
And it definitely fundamentally changed so many of us. Like, I remember discussing this a couple of years ago, and I was in ninth grade back in 1992 or 91. And I discussed it with friends a few years ago, and we were all talking about how that book is why we love reading, why we have distrust of authority, why we like certain genres more than, like, it really shaped a lot of us in a lot of ways. Wow, why we hate, like, pigs and love killing fat boys. Yeah. And yeah, all of those things. Yes, it's all part of it.
So I've really accidentally hit on some gold here.
Yeah.
I assume no, that was great. Like a Perth thing or something.
Well, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's also standard there.
Yeah.
How you get in.
Yeah, you gotta get into the stand-up scene.
Yeah. But no, it's a great book. I think it's one of the most seminal works ever.
Fantastic. All right, Jack, do you have much of a background with Lord of the Flies?
I got nothing. I'm like Simpsons parodies and that's it. That's how I enter most of these things.
Honestly, the biggest reference for me I had was The Simpsons, and I rewatched that episode last night, and it is it's a classic.
Yeah.
It holds up.
Season 9, very, very funny. Milhouse is just drowning out of the school bus. He's like, help, help. I think I'm getting swimmer's ear. Very funny. I had to pause. I laughed so much. But I didn't know too much about it, so very happy to read this one. And it has been, honestly, it's one of my most requested, which I didn't realize until, so people can request a book, and there's a link in the description of this episode if you want to suggest a book or a play or a novel or anything you like. And I should have said poetry, not novel twice, but it's been suggested by, when I keyword searched it, 37 people.
Not bad. But it is considered, many people would argue, I might even argue that, in fact, that's the best book of the 20th century.
Wow, huge, cool, love it.
Yeah, I think it's won like a BBC list or an Oxford list or something like that. You know, at the end of the 20th century, there were all these lists of the most important books, and that was up there.
Yeah, I kept finding it in multiple lists. Mm-hmm. But 37 people from all over the world, I like to give them a shout out, but it's not usually this many people, so I'm going to fire through it. They're from the UK, Ireland, Canada, the United States, Australia, Norway, South Africa, even Gibraltar are getting behind this book. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to thank, sorry, here's a list of 37 names. Marty Grievous, Joshua Fritz, Michelle Williams, not sure if it's the actress or the member of Destiny's Child, Joff, Ian Goodalock, Sandy, Rewind Turtle, Eleanor Rowe, Donnie, Kiana, Magnus Rotvarten, Riley, Sonny Smith, Daniel Gibsons, Nate Bailey, Hamza Zia, Adam Wilson, Claudia Becker, Rebecca Davidson, Sarah Groom, Alex Hamilton Harris, Quentin Chalair, Ben Rowley, Neo Van Rensburg, love that one, Liam Powell, Harrison Schultz, Annabelle Martino, Mary Angelozzi, Taylor Rose, Callum McDonald, Rose McFadzine, Tia Penny, Stephanie Arnott, Spencer Roloff, Rachel Johnson, and Oliver Petter Platt.
That was well done, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, very nicely read. And some complicated names in there, too. Mm. Oh, good pronunciation of Hamza Zia. I was impressed.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. Appreciate that. There are definitely a few that I just committed to, and I was like, that's how I'm saying it. So, Lord of the Flies, just for a background for anyone who hasn't read it, is the debut novel from English author William Golding. First published in 1954, it wasn't until 1961 that Golding gave up his day job as a teacher to become a full-time writer. He continued to write throughout his life, publishing novels, plays and poetry, notably the 1980 Booker Prize winning novel Rites of Passage. And 3 years later, in 1983, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. He died in 1993 at the age of 81. And Lord of the Flies is his most famous book and is still commonly studied in schools and has made many lists of the best books of the 20th century.
There we go. Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's the big time.
Yeah, it's not an indie bullshit book. This is a serious book. Yeah.
But as an author, Sammy, how would you feel if your first one became seminal, one of the best novels of the 20th century, and you continued to write for 40 years afterwards?
And no one brought up the other ones.
No, I know. I mean...
It must be a weird thing. I know Stephen King used to talk about that, how people would come up to him 30 years later and be like, The Stand is the best book you've written. And he's like, I've written a lot of books. And you just start hating that book, apparently. So far, nothing I've written has ever been considered the best by anyone. So, when that happens, I will resent it right away. For being,
look
for
out
being
for that.
Considered better than all the other ones I've written already. So, But also, William Golding, it was if you don't know his history, his bio, you'd assume he's a one-hit wonder because you haven't heard of any of the others.
No, but nobody. He's also won the Booker Prize. That's a huge prize.
And the Nobel Prize.
And the Nobel Prize. I mean, you can't argue with that. Shit.
Everyone was like, Lord of the Flies, that's why you're getting everything. The rest. It's like, you know, when Denzel won, not for The Hurricane, which is what he should have won for, the Academy Award, but instead he won for Training Day, which happened the year later. And, oh no, it was the other way around. He won for...
No, I think he won for Training Day, I think.
Or did he win for Hurricane but should have won for Training Day? It was one of those two. But regardless, it's that kind of a thing, I think, where they didn't want to give him the book. They should have given him the Booker for Lord of the Flies, but they didn't.
So
they gave it to some other shit hero.
There's nothing else that great this year, so we'll just give it his 80s work.
You've earned it.
Yeah. There you
go. All right, so we'll usually start with the opening line just to paint the picture. And that opening line of The Lord of the Flies, or Lord of the Flies, is, quote, "The boy with fair hair lowered himself down the last few feet of rock and began to pick his way towards the lagoon. Though he has taken off his school sweater and trailed it now from one hand, his grey shirt stuck to him and his hair was plastered to his forehead." Thus begins Lord of the Flies.
Now we're talking.
Yes, we are off.
Not as suspenseful as, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Yeah. But still pretty good. Good.
But Morgan's like, do you know how long that sentence is? Yeah. It goes for about 3 pages. Yeah. It's comparing things. It was grey. It was black. Yeah. It was hot. It was cold. There's so many things.
It's erupted in, though. Where's this boy going? Can I get to the lagoon?
Yeah.
And it's sweaty. There's a lot of scene building in that.
Yeah. His hair plastered to his forehead.
We know it's a uniform. We know he had a sweater on before this. We know it's hot. We know it's a beachy area. There's a lagoon involved. Yeah. Well done, William.
We're sucked in. We're off.
Yeah.
And we've just met our main character, 12-year-old Ralph. Love that name. Always love that name. Mm-hmm. He meets another boy on the jungle-filled island they find themselves on, described as very fat and wearing glasses.
Piggy.
Well, we found out that they were on a plane that crashed. But the pilot was not in the main tube of the plane, and the boys think that the surviving children are alone and without any adults. Mm-hmm. It seems they were being evacuated by air during a war, and the boy with glasses speculates, quote, "We was attacked, and the tube of the plane they landed in has been washed out to sea." It's quite an opening there.
Yeah. Mm. So did you read the whole book for this podcast?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I want to know what was your the opening, that kind of opening with the first few pages. How did it hit you?
Well, because I knew the thing that it's about people stranded on an island, but I did not know how they got there. Because on The Simpsons, Otto crashes the bus and then the bus, they get sucked out onto the island.
Right.
But I did not know it was a plane and I was wondering, what is going on? And for a while
this is not true to The Simpsons.
No. Yeah, exactly. I was offended.
Yes.
Not by The Simpsons, but by the original work.
Yeah.
But they could have rewritten it. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be Lord of the Flies in brackets Simpsons edition.
Yeah, of course.
They renamed the characters. Nelson. But they're all there. So, the same boy that said we was attacked asked Ralph what his name is, but Ralph does not respond in kind. He does say he doesn't mind what the others call him as long as it's not what they called him back in school. Ralph is interested to hear this nickname, which was Piggy. Ralph laughs a lot at this. So he could not care about this kid. He's like, hi, what's your name? He's like, oh, I'm Ralph, whatever. All right, well, you can call me anything you like. Just don't call me Piggy.
Such a rookie mistake.
No.
You got to be like, call me Ace. Like, you got to make the most of that.
Well, you got to say, don't call me Ace. Yeah. I hate being called Ace.
Whatever you do, don't call me Gunslinger.
Right there, the fate of this boy is sealed. You know he's not going to make it
absolutely
out.
Absolutely tragic. You just yell. I'm reading and thinking, just don't say that. It's like when you try to give yourself a nickname, which I've talked before on podcasts, but in year 8 I tried to rebrand as Cobra.
Ooh. Yeah.
And it did not take off.
What was it inspired by? The G.I. Joe villain or the Sylvester Stallone movie?
I just thought it sounded cool. It just sounded cool.
Okay.
Cobra.
Do you think you could take another run at Cobra now you're a bit more mature? And
annoyingly, once on my other podcast, Do Go On, I tried that And then we were doing a live show once, and then Matt said, "You're more of an earthworm." And because I was offended by that, that has taken off more than Cobra.
Yeah.
I did the piggy mistake. I should have been like, "Oh yeah, I'm cool with that." But what I don't want to be called is Cobra.
Yeah, fair enough.
But it didn't work. So he says, "My name's Piggy." Ralph has laughed a lot. It's the first time he's really paid attention to him properly. The boy known in school as Piggy has asthma. He's been wearing glasses since he was 3 and is quite blind without them. He tells Ralph that he lives with his aunt and uncle after his parents died. And immediately I'm feeling sorry for this kid. really bad. Yeah. He's already made the rookie mistake of saying, "Don't call me anything but Piggy." And now we're hearing his tragic backstory.
Yeah.
But Ralph, not like me, isn't very nice. He says he shows off his dad taught him to swim because he's in the Navy and surely he'll rescue them. So Piggy can't swim because of asthma and he doesn't have parents. And immediately Ralph's like, "I can swim and my dad is alive." It's like, oh, God, Ralph, show some tact.
I know. That's also part of it. It's very personality setting because it right away tells you that, you know, Piggy doesn't have social skills. Ralph is friendly, but he's not just like the most sweet, like these boys have socially not developed their abilities to communicate.
Yes, for sure, absolutely.
And empathize and all those things yet, which is a very boys' school thing.
And he's very much, focused on, you know, like, oh, whatever. This kid's just sort of dancing around him. Yeah. And just couldn't really give a shit about him. Then the two boys spot a large shell that Piggy recognizes as a conch shell. Mm-hmm. He says, "I seen one like it before, on someone's back wall. A conch, he called it. He used to blow it and then his mum would come." What kind of system is that? Like, you blow the conch and mum arrives and you're like, "Bring me some biscuits."
This is before intercoms, you know. It's a very early system.
Also, we're reading into this. Mum could have showed up and been like, "Stop blowing the... Put it back on the wall. What are you doing?"
She shows up to hit him on the back of the head.
Jesus Christ, it's my special conch show. What are you doing?
That's for emergencies only. Yeah. So Piggy encourages Jack to blow into the conch, which makes a really loud trumpeting sound, and attracted by the noise, all the other kids stranded on the island begin to gather. Sadly, that kid's mum does not turn up, which would have been fantastic. We
solved a lot of problems.
She comes, smacks Ralph in the back of the head, and then swims away.
Yeah.
The oldest of the kids are about 12, and the youngest are only 6 years old, and throughout the book they are referred to by the older ones as Littleuns.
Mm-hmm.
Piggy meets twins named Sam and Eric and then struggles to remember which is which. He's like,
hang on, sorry, one second. So Jack just tried adjusting the volume on his headphones and he used the one knob that isn't connected to any headphones at all. That's literally the only one that has headphone plug.
They are off center and it's very difficult.
I would not last on an island, Jack, at all.
I've deafened multiple people by pulling the wrong one. Because the only way to find out if it's yours is by turning it up.
Yeah.
I suppose I could go down, but usually I go up and people go, "What the fuck?"
Sorry, continue.
So, Jack, I'm not sure if you heard the Piggy meeting Sam and Eric and then struggling to remember which of the twins is which.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Classic. Yeah, comedy. This is the comedy part of the book.
They are one person to the extent that when their names are written from this point on, it's now Sam N-E-R-I-C, one word. Sam and Eric.
Okay.
They're a package. A group of older boys dressed in matching black caps and black cloaks and sweating up a storm arrive on this tropical beach, which really made me laugh. Dressed like goths, they are led by a red-headed boy wearing a badge on his hat. He, it seems, is the leader of a choir of boys, a certain Jack Merridew.
Dew or Jew?
Dew or D-E-W.
Okay,
How would you say that?
Merridew. Yeah. It's very interesting because they're wearing black with the red thing on the cap, which, you know, like right away your instinct was goth, the goth kids in school.
Yeah.
Whereas the symbolism is more, at the time when William Goldman wrote this and everything, he's referencing it during war, this is more fascism symbolism.
Oh, okay.
So that's the group of kids with the more fascistic ideology or attitudes towards things.
Well, I was furiously tearing up his notes for the rest of the
A lot of goth references coming up. Well, from now on, they'll be known as fascist goths. Yeah.
Yeah. All your vampire references and everything. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No. Thankfully, there are few and far between of those. It just made me laugh, just imagine. Because they're in, like, tropical, essentially, paradise, yeah. You could say, in some ways, and they are wearing black cloaks. Well, one of the boys faints in the sand, and Jack doesn't even care. He's like, oh, whatever. Setting him up as a bad, bad boy.
That's right.
Not sure if this reference works for anyone else, but I was always imagining him because he's redheaded, quite confident. I was imagining him as the kid, Gary, or rival that is your nemesis in the Pokemon games. Not sure if you ever played any of those.
No, I've never.
He's a confident, arrogant, and just a real prick.
Okay.
Not a fan. Not a fan of Gary, rival, or Jack, as it were.
Never gets enough Pokemon early on, though.
No, that's right.
There's no reason you can't have a full six, but he just... You'll be battling me. He's got like four
he's
or something.
Got three
and like,
or four.
And like they're good, but like just you know fill up your roster.
Yeah, have some no fillers. Reason. You can swap them out later.
Yeah,
he's a fool. I always crushed him.
Yeah.
So Jack, Meridew, tells Piggy to quiet down because he's talking too much. Well, he actually says, "Shut up, fatty." And Ralph says,
"Lovely."
Well, Ralph's like, "Mate, he's not fatty. He's Piggy," which everyone, the whole group is there, laughs at, except Piggy. And now he feels betrayed by Ralph. That's the one thing I said not to call me. He's like, "I could have rebranded as Fatty
again.
This was my chance.
Cobra, this was his chance."
Yeah. Classic earthworm situation.
Mm.
Well, Ralph suggests that they elect a chief, and Jack says, "I should be chief because I'm a chapter chorister and head boy, and I can sing C-sharp." It's always good to get your resume out
this
there,
is exactly
know?
How Scott Morrison became Prime Minister of Australia. It was like, I can sing C-sharp, and that's how... That's
no one else could.
Yeah, Peter Dutton tried.
He had a crack.
A baritone B, and yeah.
Frodberg's out on the piano going, bing, 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 bing. He's correct. They decide to have a vote, and it looks like Jack won't have an opponent until someone yells, "How about him with the shell?" meaning Ralph, which is as good a reason as any for them to vote for someone, except for the choir. They all elect Ralph as leader because someone said, "How about him with the shell?"
And this thus proves that little boys are just generally stupid, basically. This isn't, like, we're not representing our gender well here on the beach at all.
It's not.
Yeah.
And Jack is obviously pissed at this. So Ralph says he and the choir boys can be the hunters on the island, which Jack can be the head hunter. Gives him an honorary title, essentially.
Cool.
But he laps it up. It's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
It's decided that they should explore the island, so Ralph, Jack, and a choir boy named Simon go exploring. Piggy begs to go with them, but they just ignore him.
Oh,
poor old
boy.
Piggy. So the three explorers go off and have a great time exploring the large tropical island, and they climb the mountain and discover that it is indeed an island, and they are very much on their own. They encounter a wild pig, which Jack, leader of the hunters, hesitates to kill with his knife before it escapes. But he vows to never hesitate again.
Mm-hmm. Therein lies a it's that, what's it called? Hitchcock's, no, who's Chekhov's gun.
Oh, Chekhov's gun, right. Yeah. Chekhov's knife.
And this moment right here is Chekhov's knife.
Will it go off? Will his knife somehow fire a bullet in the final act?
Weirdly, no, actually. It's unresolved. Don't worry about it. Let's move on. Yes, it turns into a romantic comedy afterwards.
Yeah,
Piggy goes
right.
And works out in the woods it's and really comes fun. Back all ripped, beats the shit out of Jack, and him and Ralph return to discover they love each other.
Well, people don't know that Gilligan's Island is actually based on this.
And Lost, actually. Both of them are sequel and part three of Lord of the Flies, yes.
So Ralph blows the conch again and summons all the boys and explains that without adults, they'll have to come up with some rules. One important one is that at these meetings, only the person holding the conch will be allowed to speak. Which when I told my girlfriend that I was doing this on Booksheet, she told me that she studied it in school. And in one of her essays, trying to sound smart, she tried to say, well, this book is so influential. We see it everywhere in modern day. People even refer to things as the conch. Like people refer to a remote control for a TV as a conch. And the teacher said, that's not true. She said, yeah, it is. And then the class went around. They said, that's not true. It turns out it was just my girlfriend's family. referring to that. So, well,
sounds like a cool family now.
Yes.
I think that's a pretty cool thing.
A nerdy, cool family.
Yeah.
So if you want to make that take off, pass the conch. They still do it to this day. So only people holding the conch will be allowed to speak or change the TV channel. That's what they agree. Piggy becomes especially obsessed with the conch, and his catchphrase becomes, I've got the conch, I've got the conch. And
people Piggy's not helping himself either. Like, he started off badly, and I felt bad for him, but at some point, it's like, Piggy, you've got to have some survival instinct.
And he's got no self-awareness, really. Like a big tough kid will start talking, he'll be like, he doesn't have the conch, he doesn't have the conch. Like, and they're like, shut up, Piggy.
He's really I feel like he's like a bad comedian. He's all like nicknames and catchphrases. Yeah. Like, all kind of like brand himself.
I'm Piggy, I've got the conch. All right. Here we go. Fatty. Okay, that's me.
He's the guy 6 months into being an open micer. He's got a comedy festival show poster already with fake blurbs and everything.
Yeah, Some business cards and shit.
So Piggy announces, after saying, I've got the conch, that he's worried that no one knows where they are and that they won't be rescued. Mm-hmm. The crowd, especially the young kids, become anxious at this thought. One of the little ones, a boy with a distinctive birthmark on his face, says he saw a snake-like beast on the island, and this scares the hell out of all of them, especially the younger kids. The first mention of a beast. It will not be the last.
Mm-hmm.
The older boys try to call for calm and assure them that there's no beast and that they'll be fine. It must have just been a nightmare, that's what they say. Ralph suggests that they light a fire and keep it going so they can signal any ships that might float by the island. Everyone gets excited by this, and they run off into the forest grabbing wood, which they throw into a big pile. Piggy curses them for acting like children because he hasn't even counted them yet. That was one of his jobs, was to take everyone's names. But they've now all just run off. And he's just yelling, I've got the conch.
I've got the conch.
I've got the conch.
I've got the conch.
They're acting like children, says 12-year-old Piggy. So they get this big pile of wood, but they're unsure how to light the fire. They're like, don't you just rub sticks together? Or have you guys ever been in a survival situation?
I went camping once to Lake Sentience. It's the only time I've ever been camping.
Okay,
it's
fantastic.
It's the only time I will ever go camping.
Did it go terribly?
No, it went perfectly fine. I just don't see the point in it. Like, it's just, why would you put yourself through that when there's hotels and restaurants right there? Like, I came out of the tent in the morning.
You're camping in a food court.
Well, it was a camping ground. So there's tents around me and stuff, but also, why would I go to the bathroom in the woods when I can go to the bathroom in a hotel? Like, why am I living this refugee life when I don't have to anymore?
Sammy's walking 5K into a hotel and then walking back.
All the other tents, people got up inside making fires and making their breakfast and everything. And I had an argument with my girlfriend at the time, and we went to a cafe and had freaking avocado and toast and coffee like civilized people. I'm like, I'm not drinking shit. So yeah, that's how I would have done the island.
Okay, you would have walked to your local hotel.
Yes, exactly. I don't understand why the boys didn't do that.
Jack, you're a bit of an outdoorsy guy.
Yeah, I've done lots of camping and trekking and stuff, but I've always had some sort of something to make fire with. I don't think I've ever had to make fire. Like,
do you know how to? Like, with what are the flint and...
Yeah, have you ever used a flint? I've tried. It's very difficult.
I think maybe when I was in the scouts, I might have done a flint. But it's like, I feel like even that, it's like, if to do a flint, you'd have to bring that with you, and you could just bring matches. Like, I feel like you got to learn how to do it with just like sticks and glass and like other tricks like that, I reckon.
Glass. Bingo.
Eventually, they did it in the book.
Eventually, Jack just grabs the glasses off Piggy's face and uses them to magnify the sun, which starts a fire. And everyone rejoices. But it quickly goes out. Ralph says they need a team to keep the fire going in case that ship appears. So Jack volunteers his team of hunters/choir boys to be responsible for keeping the fire going so they're ready to signal ships or maybe also sing some sort of siren song to guide them in. So they light the fire again, and again things are great until the fire this time gets out of control and spreads to the forest. Whoops. As the fire burns, they realize they don't know how many kids they had on the island to begin with.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He's going to be extra furious.
And Ralph starts saying, Piggy, it was your fault. You're the one who was supposed to count these kids. He's like, how was I supposed to? They were running around like children. Piggy then realizes that he can't see that little kid with the birthmark on his face, the one that said he saw a snake. He was last seen playing in the part of the forest that is now ablaze, and Ralph is full of shame.
So, why is Ralph full of shame? Jack's the one in charge. Jack should be the one who should be held accountable at this point. He was the headhunter.
He was the headhunter and also in charge of the fire.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, why is Ralph always taking shit on his...
I think... Well, he just feels very responsible with him. He's like, I'm the chief. I should know where everyone is.
I happen to be holding the conch that one time when someone looked at me.
Honestly, that moment changes everything. Yeah. The conch chose him. Well, really, Piggy saw the conch.
Yeah, basically.
And chose him.
Piggy should have been in charge from the start.
He should have. Be a much nicer novel if he was. So chapter 3 opens and Jack is hunting a pig with a makeshift spear with much longer hair and he's only wearing shorts and he's very sunburnt. And I was reading that thinking, oh, it's one of the, it's the castaway situation where
time jump.
It's indicating, yeah, multiple months have gone past and he's now a great hunter. That's what I'm assuming. I'm like, he's great. They've worked out how to live on the island. Time has passed and although he's getting better at hunting, sensing the movement of the pig, he still misses with a spear and is unable to capture it. So immediately, he's not Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Back at the camp.
Also, Tom Hanks was hunting fish. He was making it easy. He should have hunted a pig if he really wanted to prove his mettle on that island. Yeah. Instead of talking to balls all the time.
You could have captured a pig. Had a pet pig.
Yeah. Had some bacon. Come on, Tom.
Well, back at the camp, Ralph, the leader, is frustrated because only he and Simon, one of the other older boys, are committed to building a shelter, which keep falling over because the other kids keep running off to play in the water. So he's worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph accuses Jack of not doing enough work because his hunters have failed to catch a single pig. It's their one job. Jack counters that they soon will and that his work is important because the kids want meat. So there's growing hostility between these two boys. It's a real Jack versus Ralph rivalry. And I've got to ask you, are you on Team Jack or Team Ralph at this point?
It's unfair because I know how it turns out. So, right, but maybe also, I never liked Jack's high C singing thing because I was just.
You thought that
jealous.
Was just too high?
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
are you jealous?
Yeah, I'm just jealous. I can't go that high, and it frustrates me.
I knew it was going to keep you out of leadership roles.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's really hurt me. I feel
that last karaoke round was the
it ain't my last job interview. Yeah,
yeah, the swimsuit competition and then the karaoke round. He really had you.
Standard behavior.
Damn it. How about you, Jack? You're sensing a kinship for either Ralph or Jack.
Well, I feel like I am Team Jack because it's like, I feel like catching a pig would be really hard with a stick. You know, it's not that easy.
It is difficult, but building a shelter, much easier.
I can build a shelter. I have built a shelter.
Really?
Killed a pig.
Where did you build a shelter?
Just on the beach once with some big driftwood and stuff.
Cool. Yeah. And how sturdy, like...
I mean, it's not standing now,
okay.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it was when I left.
It's actually called the Crown Casino now.
I'm Team Jack. Give him some sleep. Right.
Well, everything is okay during the days. Their island life develops a bit of a rhythm. They sort of get into it. But at night, the little uns are scared and continue to worry about a beast. Their diet of berries they pick is also wreaking havoc on their stomachs.
Yeah.
So that's all they've got to eat. Also, that kid with the birthmark on his face has never turned up. Tragic. Sadly, he never does turn up. So Jack is still obsessed with hunting pigs and goes off with his face now covered in clay and charcoal, thinking the camouflage will help him sneak up on the beast.
Jack is basically slowly turning into, like, First Blood Rambo.
Yeah, he totally is.
Like, that's his journey in this. Yeah. He's basically going to end up setting fire to the whole village and giving a long monologue no one understands.
And he's somehow got, like, a chain machine gun.
Yeah.
Everyone's, where did he get that from? Yeah. He's got, like, witty one-liners.
Have you seen The Beach?
With Leonardo DiCaprio? Yes.
There's a bit in that which is a bit like Jack's journey, where Leonardo DiCaprio kind of goes off on his own and just starts living in the trees and everything. And yeah, it's a bit like that.
It's a real Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone gets bitten by a shark, they leave him in the forest to
die. That movie is why I don't go swimming in the ocean in Thailand even.
Really?
Yeah. Might be sharks.
Just in case. But every other, I mean, they're famously only in Thailand.
Well, no, I mean, any other place I don't either. But people were like, in Thailand, there's no sharks. I was like, I don't know. I saw.
Have you seen The Beach?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that documentary film.
Yeah, that documentary.
So, yeah.
Leo's friend got bitten. So. Yeah. So, Ralph and Piggy see a ship on the horizon. Big moment.
Mm-hmm.
But they also note that the signal fire up on the hill is out. So they run up the hill to try and relight it, but the ship sails on before they can get it going again. They are devastated. Jack and his crew return with a dead pig on a spit, chanting, "Kill the pig, cut her throat, spill the blood," which is quite violent.
It's a choir, you know. They have to express their feelings in song.
You're right. I really should have been singing that.
And also, you're just singing it with the wrong tone. It was more melodic. It was, "Kill the pig." Like, it was more that. You're like, "Kill the pig."
Sorry, you're
anything
right.
Sounds violent when you chant it that way, you know.
Yeah. I love you. Whoa.
The hills are alive with the sound of music. Like, see, that sounds terrible now.
Yes, but if you... Yeah. You're right. You're right. They are singing high C.
Yeah.
Spill the blood. Perfect. It's beautiful now.
Thank you.
So the hunters are also covered in blood, but they're very proud of themselves, to the point that they barely hear Ralph complaining about the fire and the fact that a ship sailed past. Piggy also has a crack at Jack, which he doesn't take kindly to. So he hits Piggy hard and breaks one of his glasses, essentially half blinding him. Jack eventually apologizes for the fire going out because it was their job to keep it going, but he does not apologize to Piggy. They cook and eat the pig, and everyone seems happy, except Ralph, who at the end of the meal declares he is calling a late afternoon meeting and storms off down the hill towards the meeting place. And everyone's like, "Geez, what's going on here?" At the meeting, Ralph has a go at the group for not upholding their agreed rules.
Mm-hmm.
They don't build shelters, they're not collecting water with coconuts, they can't keep the fire going or even using the designated toilet area. It is a mess.
So they're just going everywhere.
They're shitting everywhere.
Oh, man. This sounded like a paradise up until this point. Sorry. And now shelter, just... filmed fires all day. So I'm going to sneak onto this island.
Now, but now you're like, it's a giant toilet.
Yeah.
So he tries to allay their fears of the beast that remain prevalent. He's like, "You're not respecting the rules. Everyone's scared of a beast. They don't exist." Things don't go well when Jack says, if there was a beast, he would have seen it because he's been all over the island hunting. But one of the kids says, maybe the beast lives in the water and just comes onto the land at night.
Fair point.
That's something that no one has thought of, and now the kids get terrified. And Jack's like, I don't have an answer for that. Yeah. I have not been in the water. So Ralph tries to calm them down, but Jack speaks out against him without holding the conch, which annoys Piggy.
Oh, boy.
He's like, he hasn't got the conch.
Piggy, you've got one lens in your spectacles. Just learn to take a loss.
Yeah. You know? Piggy, he is hanging on by a thread here.
I know.
Relax.
He just heard about the water monster. He doesn't need you fucking conching it up, man.
The same kid that just half blinded you.
Yeah.
You're now yelling, he doesn't have the conch. Shut up, Piggy. Jack says, without the conch, who are you anyway, to Ralph? Sitting there telling people what to do? You can't hunt. You can't sing. Which I love.
Let's be honest. Yeah. That's how most leadership should be judged.
I love that. Yeah. I know. If it was, John Farnham would be our Prime Minister.
And would that be a bad thing? No, I ask you.
I don't think so.
I ask you.
I do not think so.
Yeah.
Jack says, you can't hunt, you can't sing. And he says, if there is a beast, I'll kill it. And he runs off and a bunch of people follow him.
Mm-hmm.
Piggy tells Ralph to blow the conch. But Ralph says if he blows it now and no one comes back, then it's all over. So he lets chaos reign for now.
Which is basically, it's a symbol for the illusory nature of leadership and et cetera, et cetera. But also, Piggy needs to fucking stop with the conch thing.
Yeah.
Ralph at Piggy. Some point needs to be like, hey, if you say the word conch one more time, I'm going to smash it get out of your face.
New rule, Piggy can't say conch.
Yeah, basically. It doesn't matter who's holding it.
They each have an obsession. So Ralph is obsessed with fire. Jack is obsessed with hunting and Piggy is obsessed with the conch. That's what they want. But Ralph is slowly losing his grip on power here.
Mm-hmm.
That night, whilst everyone sleeps, it's the twins, Sam and Eric, their job to tend the fire. But they too are asleep, so they miss the firefight from military planes overhead. They also don't see the body of a soldier parachute onto the island and then get caught in some rocks. The parachute blows in the breeze and makes the body move up and down, and his head seems to rise and fall like he's still alive. So Sam and Eric, they do wake up to tend the fire, and with the larger flames, they see the large shadow formed by the dead body and parachute, and mistaking it for this beast that everyone's worried about, they run terrified down the hill and tell everyone that they've seen the beast, Which I guess is understandable.
Is basically season two of Lost at this point.
Is there a parachute man?
No, but there's a beast, isn't there? Like, it's a nanobot beast.
Yeah, it's
beast
like a weird
something.
Sort of smoke monster around.
Yeah, so.
Smoke monster. Someone's got a smoke machine. Yeah. Terrifying everyone.
But this does have a more satisfying final arc than Lost. But continue. Sorry.
Yeah, guys, stick with it. It's not going to suck at the end, I promise. So they freak everyone out. They're like, we've seen the beast. It moved.
Mm-hmm.
The group is terrified, but the older boys, except for Piggy, grab their spears and set out on a mission to find the beast.
This was Piggy's moment, by the way. If he had picked up a spear and also gone off, they'd be like, all right, you're brave. You can be one of us. But he was cradling his conch.
I know. He's like, I'll stay here and protect the conch.
Yeah. Someone's got to look out for the conch, you guys.
We've seen this before. They do a decoy beast. Real beast comes, takes the conch.
Yeah.
Now screwed.
Yeah, that's right. Then no one can talk except the beast. We have to hear their crazy rants. Do you want to listen to this beast?
Yeah, if you want to make the beast in charge, by all means.
Really, I'm the only brave one.
Yeah. I'm the real hero.
Yeah, if the beast turns up, it's just me, the beast, and the conch. And I will die for this conch. For some reason, I love it. So the group of kids with the spears, they travel to the only part of the island they haven't been to. They're like, the beast must be there. It's the only place you can hide during the day because we've been everywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's a rocky outcrop with a cave, and Ralph bravely goes out first. Then Jack joins him, and the two sort of rekindle their friendship. These are the two that have their big rivalry. They start to play around and push rocks into the ocean and note that the area would be a great spot for a fort. But then they see pig tracks and decide to stop their search to go on a hunt. And Ralph even hits the pig with his spear, but it gets away. And he feels exhilarated. He loves it. He finally understands.
Bit of bloodlust.
It's a bit of fun, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, killing stuff is fun.
Yeah.
The group starts playing a game where they pretend one of the boys, Robert, is a pig, and they chant or sing. Sorry, I thought it was chanting, but maybe you're singing.
I'm just singing.
As they round him up. But the game gets a bit out of hand, and they start to injure him with spears before remembering it's just a game. It's a bit disturbing that they get violent so quickly, but Robert is okay in this situation.
Piggy would be loving someone else, and they're pretending he's a pig and chasing him around. That would be if you're already being called Piggy and someone else is getting the pig treatment.
You're like trying to rebrand them as Piggy?
Yeah. Boy, that guy's a real Piggy. Shut up, Piggy. But also, it's not too soon for them to be getting violent. They've been on this island for a while now.
Yes.
We know that their skin's tanned darker and their hair's longer and everything. And they've already killed an animal. So they're blooded at this point.
And even the unhunt obsessed man has just thrown his first spear and gone, this is all right. This is a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Robert, he's about the size of a pig.
Yeah.
I can throw spears at Robert. So it's getting late now, and Ralph says they should wait until morning to continue their search. Mm-hmm. Most of them are terrified of the dark, but Jack accuses him of being a coward, and peer pressures him into joining him and Roger. So they go ahead. Roger, Jack, and Ralph, and into the darkness, they too mistake the dead parachuters for a monster and run terrified down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So the next day, a meeting is called, and Jack accuses Ralph of being a coward and tries a coup of sorts. He wants Ralph to be removed as leader, but when no one votes with him, he cracks it and storms off down the beach and says anyone is welcome to join him. But no one does. At first. So he's really put it all on the line, and everyone's like, I'm cool with Ralph.
Yeah.
At first.
Leadership spill. Standard Australian behaviour.
Yeah, but getting zero votes, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, he duttoned it. Basically.
Well, everyone except Simon is afraid to go and search for the beast. And because he's up where the fire was, Piggy suggests that they build a new fire near their camp. So, I assume he's holding the conch. He would never speak.
Otherwise, but it's a given. If Piggy's got dialogue, conch is in
hand. Conch. You got to imagine that conch.
And also, when anyone else has dialogue, they totally aren't holding the conch. And that's when Piggy's losing his shit.
Yeah, it's just Piggy yelling, he hasn't got the conch. He hasn't got the conch. So They get to work, building a fire, but by nightfall, many of the older boys have already left to join Jack's new camp.
Mm-hmm.
Over on another beach, Jack has declared himself chief. He leads another hunt and they kill another pig, leaving her head on a spear in the jungle as an offering to the beast.
That's right.
So now they're coming up with their own sort of rituals and rules.
Yeah, religion.
Jack then leads his followers back into the old camp to steal some fire because they don't have the ability to make fire. Piggy's got the conch and also the glasses.
Yeah.
So they go back, they steal a bit of fire, a bit of wood, and he invites anyone publicly to join him and to come over to his beach where they can enjoy a feast of meat. He then says to two of his boys, "Go on, say it." And they awkwardly say in unison, "The chief has spoken." Like they've clearly rehearsed this in the bushes. Yeah. "All right, I'll say, you can come join." And then when I nudge you, you say, "The chief has spoken." And they're like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, the chief has spoken." It's very embarrassing. Despite how lame this is, many do desert Ralph's crew to join Jack for the offer of meat. It's that classic sign-up thing on, like, a first day at uni. Come down for a free beer if you join
our
club.
That's right. Sausage sizzle.
Yeah, come on.
And right away, you've got a long line.
Yeah, fantastic. You just got to join the Socialist Alliance. Just have this beer.
I feel like if I was one of the kids whose job it was to say the chief has spoken, I would have screwed it up. Like, in the heat of the moment and the stress. The chief has spoken. Like, just gotten it wrong.
Jack's like, damn it. Yeah. Shut up.
You're Piggy now.
Yeah. Piggy doing Piggy's like, yes.
5 years of choir practice. You can't say one thing in unison.
Jesus Christ. So meanwhile, Simon, one of the choir boys, who is always a bit left of center.
Did anyone here go to a boys' school, by the way?
I did not.
No,
did
you?
No, same here. Like, so I always want, like, our choir groups, like, in boys' schools, are they, like, the fascists hang out there? Or is that where the power really lies?
Instead of, like, so you've got jocks, and, but also slash choir boys.
Yeah, like, if you're a jock and a choir boy, which is what Jack is, basically.
Because he's big and strong,
and also he can hit a high C. Does that just make you, like, the most powerful kid in school?
Yeah, you can hit a high C, do a drop punt.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
You're the coolest kid in school. So Simon, one of the choir boys, he's always been a bit left of center. Like, he would just go out and hang out in the forest on his own. He's a real bit of a nomad. He snuck away into the forest to get a glimpse of the beast. He's the one that said, "Oh, let's go back up there." And they're like, "Absolutely not."
Yeah.
He comes across the impaled...
He is the goth that you want. That sounds pretty goth to me.
Pretty goth, pretty punk rock.
Yeah.
He comes across the impaled pig's head that they left as an offering in the forest. Now swarming with flies, which mesmerizes him. And then he hears the voice of the head speak to him as, quote, "Lord of the Flies," another term for the devil. It torments him and says he and the others will never escape the island. And the voice tells him that he lies within all human beings. And with this, Simon passes out.
That's right.
So there's a bit of a mystical moment here.
Yeah. Mm. He has a full-on hallucination or a visitation.
Yeah, that's right. What is that real? Or is he having a freak out
in
the forest?
Or did he have some berries again? And,
yes.
And some of those berries could be, you know.
He's had magic mushrooms.
Some juju berries, yeah.
And now he's...
It's such a, like, specifically a grotesque moment that for it to lead to the naming of a, like, vegetarian fast food chain, like, 50 years later. For Lord of the Flies to be, I've always like known that was what it was parroting, but that to be the specific moment that it's based on, like a rotting pig's head. They didn't think that through marketing wise.
So in Australia we have, I think it might be just be a Melbourne thing. Is it just a Melbourne
thing? I think it's just a Melbourne thing. I haven't seen it in Perth.
It's a late night sort of hot chip place called Lord of the Fries.
That's right. They do sweet potato fries, which are pretty all right.
I really quite rate their thick cut chip with a Belgian sauce.
Basically, during the Melbourne Comedy Festival, you'll find most comedians lined up outside Lord of the Fries at about like 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
But you're right, it is, Jack. It is because it's like everything there is vegan. Like they do like meat style burgers, but with vegan filling.
And I really love that they're sneaky about it. Like they just don't. That's not really their whole advertising. They're like, it's greasy and it's midnight. Get in here, and then people come in and they're like,
"Ha ha, we made you healthy.
This is a good burger." And then they're like, "Suck it, that was vegan, you idiot."
Yeah, that bacon was faking. Yeah. All right. But because if you look at it, everything does say like meat patty, but they might smell meat like slightly off, like MEET or something.
But like an umlaut in there.
What does that mean? Meat patty? Yeah.
Although it is weird that, like, you know, when you order your food, they give you a conch, and your conch vibrates when you know it's your turn.
I've got the conch. So that's obviously where the title of the book comes from, Lord of the Flies. And I did read, it was called something else, like The Outsiders or something like that.
Oh, really?
And then...
alternate title for it.
Yes, apparently William Golding wanted to call it that and the publisher knocked it back as quite boring. And I feel like... Would it have been that successful, do you think, with that?
It's a great title. Lord of the Flies is a great title.
Iconic. And then, obviously, we wouldn't have this great late-night vegan food. Yeah. So history would have changed.
It's really vindicated itself.
We probably would have lost the Second World War somehow.
I would have called it Piggy and the Boys. Sell some units, I think.
Conch.
Yeah, conch. Or yeah. I've got the conch.
I've got the conch, yeah.
Picture of a kid on the front holding it. I mean, sell a few units. When Simon does wake up, so he's just had this hallucination or visitation, we're not sure. He continues his journey up the hill to try and find the beast. And despite having been the one who has that hallucination, he's also the first one to see sense. And when he sees the parachutist's body, he realizes what's happened.
Yeah.
It's not a beast at all. It's just a man. Although it does smell terrible. Now it's been rotting in, out in the open. So it smells so bad that he vomits. He manages to regain his composure enough to untangle the parachute from the rocks. He then decides to head back down the mountain and tell the others what he's just seen. Explain away the myth.
He's like, well, first the pig talked to me.
Yeah.
Then I fainted. Yeah. Then I vomited. And now I've got you a parachute. And they're like, why don't you fuck off, mate? You're not doing well. Have less berries in your diet. And then we'll talk.
I actually did not make that connection that his plan is to go down there and say, hey, that's not a beast. Also, there's another beast.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Also, the devil is here. Yeah. And he's in all of us.
That's not the beast to worry about.
Good news and bad news.
Yeah.
So Jack's camp is having their feast on the beach, and Ralph and Piggy even go over to observe. Basically, everyone's gone over to the second camp for this feast. Jack is covered in war paint, sitting on a king's throne and barking orders to what are now essentially his servants. They all eat meat, even Ralph and Piggy, and Jack offers for the newcomers to join his tribe. He said, anyone who's here, you can join my tribe. Except despite Ralph protesting, saying that they have no shelters and a storm is brewing. Jack jumps up and orders his followers, as a bit of a power play, to do their hunting dance, and the group start chanting or singing kill the beast, cut his throat,
kill the beast,
spill his blood. I mean, it's beautiful. Spill his blood.
Yeah. Sung to the tune of Wake Me Up Before You Go Go by Wham.
They did the kill the beast. It's sort of mesmerizing, and even Piggy and Ralph on the outside of the group start to feel part of it. Mm-hmm. Sort of quite tribal what they're doing. Roger mimes being a pig at first, and the group start to chant. It gets louder and louder, and they sort of do the faux attack on him, but he doesn't get hurt. Then Simon, who's been up on the hill, crawls out of the shadowy bushes. He's yelling about a body that he saw up on the hill, but in the trance-like state, the hunters do not seem to recognize him, and they descend upon him in mass, screaming, biting, tearing, and clawing, which sounds vicious. Only when it starts to rain do they get off him, Simon lying dead on the beach.
Oh, man.
The first kid killed.
Yeah, so his body is washed out to sea, and they have
They've all been a part of basically killing him, because it's almost like ritual sacrifice, because they were all kind of het up because of all the singing and the meat eating and everything, and then they just killed one person. Yeah.
Meanwhile,
excuse the killing if you've all been singing. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
A bunch of boys singing at the same time. There's going to be casualties.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually how most... Yeah.
You sound like people protesting against the Beatles in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
If these four boys come together, there's going to be murders.
I don't know what karaoke's you guys go to, but mine usually end in bloodshed, so...
Meanwhile, up on the hill, the dead body's parachute, now it's been untangled from the rocks, is picked up by the wind and flies over the beach where the kids are. The boys run terrified into the forest as the parachutist is blown out to sea. So importantly, now the dead body and the only person who knew the truth that it wasn't a beast are both gone.
Yes.
So any way of explaining that there's no beast, not possible anymore. Yeah.
The devil spoke to the wrong guy. He'd be so annoyed. He's like, I had one shot to get my message out.
Really wasted it straight away.
You know how hard it is to take the form of a dead pig's head?
That was my one shot per month. Yeah. The next morning, Piggy and Ralph are back at their beach camp, deeply ashamed of what happened to Simon and that they were there. It's now just them, the twins, Sam and Eric, and the little ones that remain. Everyone else has gone and joined Jack. Piggy tries to rationalize that what happened to Simon was an accident, as the group that descended on him didn't realize it was him. But Ralph says it was murder. But then they all try and the four of the boys there, Sam, Eric, Ralph and Piggy, all sort of try and pretend that they weren't there last night. They're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, went home pretty early, actually. So
all that singing and dancing really duckered me out.
Yeah, that's right. After the first bit of singing, I wasn't there for that second bit where we killed a boy. I wasn't there. They're like, what? No, nothing. I didn't even know that a boy was killed. First I've heard of it.
Simon, never met him.
Yeah. So Jack and his crew have now set up on their rocky outcrop that earlier had been speculated would make a great fort, referred to as Castle Rock, which Stephen King...
That's right.
Which I was reading...
Because he's a giant Lord of the Flies fan. Like, he considers it one of the best books ever written. And it's the name of the town in which he set most of his short stories for the first half of his career, Castle Rock.
And then the production company that made Seinfeld
That's
was inspired
right.
by Stephen King. You know, at the end of Seinfeld, it says Castle Rock Entertainment?
Yeah.
There you go. Jack rules with an iron fist, punishing boys with violence and saying that Ralph and Piggy are a threat to them. So he's really turning the others against them.
Yeah.
He's pushing the story that Simon was the beast and that the beast can take many forms and that they must guard against it. The beast turned into our friend Simon. We had to murder him.
He's a shape-shifting beast. Anyone could be the beast except for me.
Yeah, that's right. Also, has anyone seen Simon? No. Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's always the beginning of the end when people start, like, assuming shape-shifting is happening. That's always, like, right before shit gets real bad when they're like...
Yeah. If that is believed by everyone, it's all over.
Yeah.
This is the moment that a young John Carpenter, while reading this book, goes, oh, that's a pretty good idea for a sci-fi movie. And the thing was born.
It's also what I find ruins the Mission Impossible movies, because you can't trust anyone because they have that mask. You can just dress up as anyone.
Yeah.
You can't trust anyone.
It was deepfake before deepfake
was too much. Like, you can just undo 3 hours of plot by being like, oh, by the way, it was me, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, but it's always Tom Cruise.
It's
Tom
Cruise. Yeah. So Jack leads a group of hunters to go and steal fire from the other camp because they still don't have the ability to make their own.
At this point, it's only Ralph and Piggy in the other camp. Just take all the fire.
Like, just take it.
Yeah. Stop stealing it.
Well, in the middle of the night when they're asleep, they attack Ralph, Piggy and the twins, pulling down their shelter and badly assaulting them. Mm-hmm. Ralph is confused why they didn't just ask for the fire because he's like, I would have gladly shared it. But Piggy reveals he knows why. They've taken his glasses so they can have fire anytime they want. Piggy can barely see now, and they have no fire, so it's decided the only course of action is to go to Castle Rock and talk some sense into Jack, which sounds like a great plan.
Every bit of this idea will work out fine.
Maybe they haven't heard the shape-shifting theory yet. They think they can still bring him back from the edge. So Ralph takes the conch with him to remind the others.
Oh, goddamn conch.
He's got to remind them of their former society. And he carefully leads Piggy, who can only see a couple of feet in front of him.
Yeah.
They get to Castle Rock, which sits high on a cliff above the ocean, and Ralph tries to talk some sense into the boys that are on guard duty there. Jack is off hunting, and they've been told not to let Ralph in. Ralph blows the conch to try and shame them, but they don't listen. Jack and a group of his hunters arrive carrying a pig carcass. Ralph calls Jack a thief for taking Piggy's glasses, which he takes great offense to. Even I don't know how you could argue against that.
Yeah.
I'm not a thief. I just took the glasses that weren't mine.
He wasn't using them. His eyes were closed at the time. He was sleeping.
He wasn't lighting fire with them. And both carrying spears, Jack and Ralph begin to fight using them as swords. Do a bit of fencing. Piggy, who is crouching down for balance on the high cliff because he can't see anything, reminds Ralph why they came, and Ralph delivers an impassioned speech about how without a signal fire, they'll probably never be rescued. Remember, that's his obsession.
Yes.
But the boys mostly laugh at him. So Jack orders members of his tribe to grab the twins, Sam and Eric, and tie them up. They are captured and led away, and he says to Ralph, "See, they do what I want." Bad boy.
Yeah. He's the boss.
Ralph screams, "You're a beast and a swine and a bloody, bloody thief." They again fight, this time with their fists. Holding up the conch.
And you can't even sing a high C. So you bastard.
We have no way of proving it's still a high C. I have perfect pitch. No, you don't. Holding the conch, Piggy tries to deliver an impassioned speech to break up the tension. He yells, "I got the conch! I got the conch!" And the group amazingly goes silent for him.
It worked! The conch worked!
He says, "I got this to say. You're all acting like a crowd of kids." He starts lecturing them, and then also, and Jack also starts yelling, and now they're both yelling. High up above them, a boy named Roger, who's been a real prick throughout this whole story.
Yeah. Roger's a shit name.
Oh, it's funny,
like,
because
I've never met a Roger I like.
It's from the 50s, all these boys' names, they have like grandpa names.
Yeah. Bartholomew. Yeah. A boy named Rudolph. Yeah.
And Roger, he's violent. He's not a good kid. He's standing up on a cliff next to a boulder. He's high up above them, and he pushes the boulder off with a stick, using it as a lever. It's massive, and it rolls down the hill, knocking Piggy, smashing his beloved conch into 1,000 pieces. And Piggy is pushed off the cliff by the force down to the rocks 40 feet below. So he's fallen over 10 meters. He hits his head, and he dies instantly. The harsh waves suck his body into the sea. Tragically, Piggy is no more.
Man.
Ralph is speechless, and Jack yells, "See? See? That's what you'll get. I mean that. There isn't a tribe for you anymore. The conch is gone." Let alone poor Piggy.
Yeah. Jack has no pity for Piggy.
No, Piggy. Even Ralph isn't really thinking about Piggy that much. Yeah. He's shocked.
It's disassociation is what it is.
I suppose it's one way of sort of dealing with the situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never got to look at this conch, though. It might be so good that
it's a great conch.
Yeah. When you see the conch, you get it. You're like, this is better.
As conch is good.
Better than a boy.
That's worth at least three boys.
Yeah.
When a third boy dies, I'll be upset. But until
two have died.
Yeah.
But that conch is still...
That's only like two-thirds of a conch.
But now they lost the conch.
We've lost the conch.
Yeah. We never know. We never know.
I just started giggling about... This is not related, but I just started imagining an antiques roadshow where they like give the value of something in boys. Yeah. Like, this cabinet, seven boys maybe. I don't know. If we can get it authenticated, seven boys.
And they say, "Oh my goodness." Well, I would never sell it. Of course, it's been this thing worth seven boys has been in the family for a long time.
Yeah. But, as they're calling up Christie's on their phone. They're like, yeah.
"We'll have to get insured though for seven boys." I thought it was only worth two. So... With Jack yelling, there's no try for you anymore, he throws his spear at Ralph, which hits him in the chest and badly wounds him, and Ralph runs for his life into the jungle. Mm-hmm. Initially, Ralph, who is quite wounded, goes back to his shelter, but he decides not to spend the night there alone. He goes back to Castle Rock to talk some sense into the others. He still thinks he can get through
so
to them.
So well the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, "All right, we went over with four. I came back with one. I reckon I can spin this situation."
Maybe I didn't say the right words. Yes. It was just the phrasing was wrong.
On the walk there, he comes across the Lord of the Flies, or the pig's head on a stick. He grabs the stick to use as a weapon, and in doing so, knocks the skull onto the ground, which breaks in two. Mm-hmm. Symbolic.
That's right.
He gets back to Castle Rock and sees that the twins, his old friends Sam and Eric, are on guard duty. He speaks to them, but they say they can't help him now for fear of being beaten. Basically, they were tortured into joining Jack's crew. They tell Ralph that the others plan to search for him the next day. They do give him some meat. Ralph explains that he will hide close by in the bushes because they'll never think to look that closely to their own hideout.
All right. Clever.
Kind of plain sight.
Yeah.
He asks the twins to try and keep the search away from him. He's like, "Do us a favor." Ralph asks him what the others' plans are for him when they find him, and they say that they saw one of the group sharpening a stick at both ends, which sounds very nasty. But before they can complete the thought, someone else comes, and Ralph has to run away. He can hear Sam and Eric being reprimanded for talking to him. So Ralph, with that hanging over him, knowing that they're looking for him with a sharp stick, not knowing what's going to happen, he hides in a very thick bush. But he awakes to hear Sam and Eric giving up his position under duress. So his old friends have sold him out.
Twins. Can't trust them.
I know. Exactly.
Yeah.
They'll look out for each other, but no one
else. Ralph's twins. Just generally don't trust anyone.
Never trust a man not holding a conch. First, they push a huge boulder onto Ralph's hiding place, and then they try to get at him with sticks. But the place he's hiding is so thick they can't get to him. So then he smells smoke and realizes that Jack has set fire to the jungle around him to smoke him out. The flames spread quickly, and soon a large portion of the island is ablaze.
Excellent short-term thinking there,
yeah,
Jack.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Great. If there's nowhere to hide, we'll get him. Also, we'll have nowhere to live, and also the berries will be ruined. But
we got him.
We got him. Ralph runs for his life and pushes through Jack's men with his spear. Panicking and wondering what to do, he runs, pursued by a team of spear-throwing boys screaming across the jungle. They've now fully lost it.
Yeah.
There's no society left here. He outruns the savage boys and the fire and makes it onto the sand of the beach, thinking he's about to be killed. Quote, he staggered to his feet, tense for more terrors, and looked up at a huge peaked cap. He was white drill, epaulets, a revolver, a row of gilt buttons down front of a uniform. A naval officer stood on the sand, looking down at Ralph in his wary astonishment. End quote. The officer looked at a semicircle of clay-covered boys who had appeared on the beach. Fun and games, said the officer. It seems the fire had attracted the attention of a nearby Navy boat. So Ralph was right about a fire.
Yeah.
They just had to set fire to the entire island.
That's all. It's about the size of the fire.
He says, we saw your smoke. What are you doing, having a war or something? Nobody killed, I hope. Any dead bodies? Only two, says Ralph, and they're gone. The officer knew when people were telling the truth. He's like, holy shit.
this
kid is not lying.
These boys have seen some shit.
I thought they were mucking around. He also asks who's in charge. I am, says Ralph loudly. The officer says, I would have thought a pack of British boys would have been able to put up a bit better than that, I mean. Ralph says, it was like that at first, before things. Ominously.
Also, it wasn't like that at first. It was shit from the get-go.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. It was
you
just
want to look cool for the Navy guy, though. Yeah. We did a pretty good job for a while, man. Yeah.
Man, if you'd come 3 days ago, that would have been fantastic.
It was fantastic.
It was great. You know, we just
eating on the beach.
Beast. Simon was like seeing like Beelzebub on on a stick.
Piggy was still alive.
It was great. He was yelling, I've got the conch. We loved it. But with that, he said before things, and with that, he began to cry, giving into the grief. And then the other boys join in, so they all start sobbing on the beach. And the last line of Lord of the Flies is, and in the middle of them, with filthy body, matted hair, and unwiped nose, Ralph wept for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true, wise friend called Piggy. The officer, surrounded by these noises, was moved and a little embarrassed. He turned away to give them time to pull themselves together and waited, allowing their eyes to rest on the trim cruiser in the distance. End book.
That's right.
So we can assume that they were rescued.
They were rescued, but they were rescued by a ship of war, the idea being that men always make war.
I love that.
Yeah.
And also, tragically, we never learned Piggy's name.
Doesn't matter.
It's just Piggy.
He's Piggy.
He's Piggy.
Yeah.
We're all Piggy.
We are all Piggy. That's
well,
right.
I'm Cobra, but
I'm Conch. Now that I think about it. It's a metaphor. The whole thing's a metaphor for society and fascism and war and all of those things. But there's a really cool footnote to this, which is in 1953 or 56, there was a group of six Tongan boys who actually did get marooned on an island for a prolonged period of time. And they did
very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made a pact right away to never quarrel. And they held that pact up. And then they built shit and survived until people found them.
Yeah, they did. I assume that they didn't smash their conch.
No.
Everything was great.
Yeah, they respected the conch. And,
Do you remember how long they were there?
I have no idea, actually. I remember it was like several weeks was in the article that I read.
Yeah, quite a long time. We did a Do Go On podcast about that, actually.
No way. Basically it turns out anyone would do fine in that situation except for private school boys.
That's it.
Is the moral of the story. Yeah.
Jack, how are you feeling? Obviously, Sammy's known this story for a long, long time, but...
I really enjoyed that. I feel like it got... I feel like I don't like stories where everyone's a kid in it. I don't know why. I find them generally quite boring, and I feel like you have to be... You have to, if it's a kid-only thing, it's got to be of such a high quality for me to care at all. So it's, I'm definitely more interested to read it now.
I prefer this to, like, The Famous Five or something like that.
I did like when they killed George at the end of Famous Five. And, yeah,
they sacrificed him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked how it got, there was no, like, the descent into chaos was really well measured.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there was no point where you're like, oh, that's too much of an aggressive jump towards madness. Like every step, you're like, I can see how that would happen. And then you get to the point that you're all killing each other and running around with spears and burning everything down. And you're like, oh, yeah, that was a smooth, realistic descent into madness.
And I was not aware of the bit where they kill Simon and then the body floats away. I was like, that's good storytelling.
Man. Yeah, that's great storytelling.
Yeah, it's really, really good because it's like, well, now there's no way of ever finding out.
They made a movie, but I can't remember. I remember we watched it in school and it was okay. And I remember thinking that at the time it was okay, so it probably wasn't very good at all in retrospect. But yeah, if someone doesn't want to read the book, which it's beautifully written. It's a very, sparse prose and everything. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I will say there's a lot of description of Ireland. I feel like I have been on this island now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of description. If you, at the moment, it's harder to go on a tropical holiday. So in between the children murdering each other,
it
you also feel like you're on a beautiful beachside location.
Yeah.
So there's that element as well.
There. So it's relaxing while also being harrowing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, if you look past the time that Piggy fell to his death.
Mm.
I mean, the trees were lovely.
It's great. There's berries.
Yeah.
There's pigs, Yeah. Yeah.
How would you, do you think you guys would go if you were stranded on an island?
I would love it until I didn't. The idea of doing that sounds great to me.
Like, and we know you do have a bit of outdoorsy experience.
Yeah, I need Jack there.
So, if I'm good. Yeah.
You've built a shelter before. I like that.
I feel like when I get stressed, I really like fantasize about just living in the woods or living on an island or something. That's like a real stress relief thing. So I'd have a great time until I got hungry and realized I actually had to do some shit. And then if that stuff was like harder than I imagined, then yeah, that would be annoying.
Yeah, when I get stressed, I fantasize about moving to a hotel. So
that's similar. Right. I mean, on the island, you are just thinking about that hotel the entire time. Yeah. I think I would be absolutely terrible. I mean, I love a tropical beach.
Yeah,
but I'm also not a big fan of camping and
killing
sleeping
pigs
outside
for meat.
Yeah, that's right. I think I would do badly.
Yeah, I would not survive it. Firstly, if my glasses break, I'm done.
Oh, how far can you see without those?
And barely. I can barely see anything. -10.75 and -11 in both my eyes. So I'm shit without my specs.
Okay.
And after those are gone, which will inevitably happen, I'm done for. Then I might as well be eaten by the other kids. In fact, I might sacrifice myself so the other kids have something to
You're willing to do
to
that.
To save.
That's very big of you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And also then they'll have your glasses to start the fire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, everyone gets helped out and I would last long.
I would not last long.
Depends where, it is crazy how ill-equipped we are to do that, I think. Like, I got really obsessed with the show, I think it was called Alone or something, where it's just like, people just get dumped in these different, it was like in, this one was in Canada, I think.
Man versus Wild.
This is like groups of people, like a reality show, and it's you have to stay there as long as you can.
Oh, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Do these people go against their will?
Yeah, they just drag anyone on the street and they wake up there and they don't know where they are. But it was, they're like survival experts and stuff. And they're like, sometimes they'll be going great for like months and months. They'll have built a shelter, they'll be hunting, they'll be fishing, they'll be foraging, and then they'll just fall in the lake a little bit. And then they'll just, their just body can't warm up. They're just too cold. And they can sit next to the fire and it's just hypothermia is too much.
Wow. Oh, wow. Like,
just little bits like that where you wouldn't even, like survival experts who really know their stuff. It's just like little things like that. Like we're so unequipped to actually survive long term without any backup.
Oh, man, that has made me think even my chances are even slimmer.
Well, it's little things like there'll be ticks that'll poison your blood for some reason, or there'll be some bug.
Or like a berry, you don't get sick immediately, but like after eating nothing but that for 3 weeks, it's like,
you shit yourself to death. Or in my case, it would just be, there'd be some health issue or there'd be some weather issue or something. And it's not worth it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't get shipwrecked on an island.
If you were thinking of doing a Lord of the Fries, don't do it.
That tour, that tour is not worth the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I suppose that this is also shows that just because it is told from the perspective of the kids. Like, you never find out much about the plane crash or what happened.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, like what the situation was. It's obviously quite amazing that so many of them survived, but... It's also implied that not all of them did.
I wonder what happens like later. Because obviously them collecting, they get, it's a news story and all that stuff.
Yeah.
When they get back. What, like, does Jack go into investment banking? Does Ralph become, you know, an environmentalist or a human rights advocate or something? You know, what happens in the 30-year or the 50-year reunion?
Yeah, do they have the reunion and do they, you know, do they get punished for their crimes or do they all, like, have a cone of silence?
Yeah. I don't think they'd get, they were kids. You can't
But, like, do you think that they, you know, the parents find out that two boys were murdered, or do they?
Biggie and Simon's mums want to know what the fuck went down.
Or could you just say, hey, some people died in the plane crash?
Yeah.
Wink, wink, wink.
Wink, wink. It's like those kids in Alive, the movie where they, the plane, the football team, Argentina.
Oh, yes, in Uruguay, yes.
Yeah, and they all ended up eating each, the dead bodies, and everyone's like, we just got by, we ate snow.
Yeah, for a long time. Don't say anything. Don't say anything.
Why are there bite marks on the butt? Shut up.
So we always score it out of five at the end of the podcast. Now, I'm feeling the same. You'll probably give it quite a positive score, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. But maybe we'll start with you, Jack. How are you feeling? Out of five, what would you give Lord of the Flies?
I'm going to say, having not read it, but enjoying the description, I'm going to say a 3.5.
3.5 out of 5 from Jack. Thank you.
What
very
would
much.
You give it?
I'm going to give it, I must say, I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Wow.
I did very much enjoy it. And I felt like the halfway through, I was a bit like, oh, this is a bit of a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, just in terms of, because you are following kids, it did feel like something, not like maybe a younger adult novel
thing. Yeah,
but then as the madness ensues and stuff like the fact that they can't prove that it is not a beast anymore, things like that, I was like, oh, okay, I'm really enjoying this. And it just, it really sucked me in.
Cool.
And it bumped up that last sort of point, I'd say, in the last quarter.
Well, yeah, that's interesting because I haven't read it in years. And when I first read, I was in year 9, so I was very young, so, and I probably loved it for that reason. I'd probably give it a 4. Yeah.
4 out of 5, fantastic. Yeah. Even though it shaped your life, you're not
I was going to say, that's a very conservative scoring system.
There's two books I put above it in terms of, like, you know, even better in terms of influencing me and stuff. This was a very big one. It's probably one of the reasons why I have, like, I ended up becoming a journalist or something because of distrust of power, which is a big part of the lesson of this book. But I'd probably say Midnight's Children would be a 5, and that's the only one that would be a 5. And The Stand might be a 4.5.
Okay, so your scale 5 is the perfect book.
Yes.
And there's only one.
Yeah,
that's right, Midnight's Children is the only one.
By Salman Rushdie. Yeah.
Okay, right. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go there.
I must say I've given quite a few books 5 on this show. So.
All right. Okay.
But if I adjust my scale to the Sammy Shah scale.
Then, yeah. What got a 5 last that you remember?
I gave The Grapes of Wrath 5.
All right. Fair enough. Did except feel... for the milk part at the end.
Yeah. That it's quite.
I think that knocks it down a point.
Interesting.
decision.
Well, it could be argued that that is a beautiful ending to a harrowing tale, Jack. Don't want to give it away in case you have not read that one. There's a few that I've given. Of Mice and Men, I really like Steinbeck.
Yeah, yes.
I gave that 5 out of 5. It does always amuse me. I sometimes have people on here and I talk about this and I was like, I'll do a Shakespeare and they give it 1.5 or something. It just really makes me laugh. I love that. I love it. It's so funny.
There was some shit Shakespeare.
There's been
as well.
A few.
Yeah, yeah.
There's been a few. But yeah, that's the most two I've given.
Okay,
cool. Giving 5. I really should go back and keep like I write it down at the end of each of them, but I don't keep it in one place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What I should do is keep like a little tally and get the average of it. Maybe start a Goodreads account where it's just like the book cheat average for this book. Because we're looking at it between us, we're giving it a 4 out of 5.
I think that's good.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah. Good job, William.
So at the end of Lord of the Flies, I feel like we've learned a lot about each other today.
Mm. Definitely.
But no, thank you so much for coming on, gentlemen. And it's coming up into Melbourne Comedy Festival season here
in Melbourne. Yes, it is.
And both of you have some shows coming up, which I'd love people to check out.
Yeah. Mine is called Conch. It's it's all about the importance of conches.
This is very great marketing.
I'm from a very like conch based, like only I talk. This is if you talk, you're insane.
No like, heckling can happen.
Start yelling at people if they do speak out.
Yeah. My show's it's called Sammy Shah Cuck.
I love it.
Which is C-U-C-K Cuck. And it is basically from the March 24th to the April 6th, or 5th, sorry, March 24th to April 5th at the Comedy Republic. Tickets still available.
Fantastic. I'll put a link in the description of this episode to check that out. And Jack, your show?
My show is called Rat Paradise.
I love that title as well.
Thank you. It's, 10 nights, sort of the middle 2 weeks of the Comedy Festival at Loop Bar.
Cool.
And, come check that out if you can.
I'll also put a link there. Both of your stand-up I'm a big fan of.
Thank you very
highly
much,
recommend
man.
If you are out and about in Melbourne and want to see some shows, we can go out and about again. How good is this?
Don't jinx it.
Sorry. And I don't want to jinx it because I'm doing my first ever and possibly only ever live book cheat around the same time.
Oh, cool.
On Sunday, April 4th at 4:15 in the afternoon at the European Beer Cafe. You can see me, Ben Russell and Michelle Brazier go through a classic live before your very lives and eyes.
Yes.
come along to that as well. I'll put a link in the description of this episode. But until next time, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
And I always say at the end of this, and I'm slightly embarrassed to say it for the first time in front of Sammy, but books forever!
I agree with that sentiment.
Bye, everyone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.